Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to the Nerd Party News. I'm Mike.
I'm Lance.
And it's November 30th, 2020, and this is a brand new show on the Nerd Party where we will bring you the movie, TV, and nerd news each and every week. But before we get into the news, Lance.
Yeah.
Have you seen anything good this week?
Yeah, man. The Mandalorian.
Yes.
Bro. This show is so good.
It is.
Like, this is everything that I wanted the sequel trilogy to be in a lot of ways, in a lot of respects. And it's just the quality's great, the stories are great. I don't want to be too spoilery because I'm not sure if people have seen it or not, because like, I was spoiled on the most recent episode because I was waiting to kind of do a binge, but then when I was spoiled with the events of the past episode, I was like, all right, well, I have to put all my binging plans aside and I have to catch up now. And I'm so glad that I did because the show's great.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I was a big fan of season one, and because of the spoiler issue, you know, I make it a point of staying off of social media until I can watch each episode. And I usually try to watch it like in the morning, you know, first thing, just so that, you know, but I think everyone kind of knew that Ahsoka was coming here and everything that had sort of been, you know, spoiled months ago, but it was still really cool to see her, you know, in live action, just, you know, kicking butt. That was pretty great. And, you know, the show on the whole, I mean, I love it. I definitely think that it's up there with some of the best Star Wars stuff, I mean, ever, but especially in recent years, too. And it's interesting to see this season how they're really kind of like expanding it. You know, the first season was very self-contained. You almost didn't have to watch any Star Wars to know what was going on.
Yeah.
In this season, they're really like getting into some pretty deep cuts, which is cool.
They're getting into deep cuts, but also they're dipping into the success they had with animation as well, because Ahsoka is an animated creation, and they're dipping into they're toeing the Rebels waters as well. So it's pretty cool that they're acknowledging that part of the universe and bringing that to live action, because they A, knew it was successful, and B, was popular. So why not go for it?
And yet at the same time, if you've never seen Clone Wars, if you just see Ahsoka on screen, I mean, it's no different from, you know, any of these other planets that he goes to where it's like, oh, there's a random person doing some random stuff, you know, it can totally work on its own as well. So I think they did a really good job with that for sure.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
How about you?
I've been watching some older stuff, but my wife and I have been trying to work through the Arrowverse.
Okay.
Because for some reason we never watched it when it first came on. I think, I don't know if I thought it was like a spinoff of Smallville or whatever, and we didn't watch that. But then, you know, once they started really getting into it, then it became like this insurmountable task. Like, we've missed too much, so, you know.
Yeah.
So we just...
I've been there.
Yeah, I know, right? And as is usually the case, whenever there's like a comic book convention, I go to it, and then I come back and I'm like, I'm going to get into comics. I'm going to read all of them. And then they usually last for like a week, and then I fall off again. But they had the DC Fandome, right? Mm-hmm. A few months back. And, you know, my wife is like, why aren't we watching the Arrowverse? Let's do this. And I'm like, okay, let's do this. And we started it. And we basically just haven't stopped in in the past like 4 months.
Welcome to my world.
we've got like 9 episodes left in like season 5. You know, so season 5 of Arrow, and then season 3 of Flash and Supergirl and all that. Okay. So,
well, you made it out of the dark time then.
Is
Arrow,
that,
at least.
Okay, well, that's good. I mean, there's some stuff in Arrow where it's like, what's going on here? Why do I care? I don't understand. Yeah. But on the whole, I'm fairly impressed. Like, none of it is like, oh my God, this is mind-bending. But it really kind of like scratches that comic book itch that I have, right?
Okay.
It feels like I'm reading like comics on a weekly basis, you know?
Yeah, I think that's probably the best compliment you can give to the Arrowverse. And, you know, for all of the shortcomings that the Arrowverse has, there are a lot of positives that you can take away from it. And I think one of the bigger positives you can take away from it is that it does feel like it is a monthly comic book each week when you're watching those things. Because comic books are A, great, but they're also weird and they're also silly in a lot of regards. And you get that entire bag when you're watching the Arrowverse.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like the thing that I'm most excited about, just like with comic books, is, you know, the unexpected crossovers, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, like if I see, you know, Ollie Queen show up on Arrow, I'm like, oh, there he is. But if I see him show up on Flash, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's
exactly.
And I don't know why that is. It's just, I guess it's just one of those things, right? But mm-hmm. that idea of like an expanded universe and everything, it's cool. It's one of the things that I love about comic books. And I'm really glad that they lean into it here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. So I haven't really had time to watch anything else because that's literally all we've been watching for like the past 4 months. So
yeah, that's basically what I've been watching for the past 8 years. So it's all good.
Well, yeah. I mean, for those people who don't know, you have an Arrow podcast, right?
I do. Yes. Always Hold On to Arrow, part of the United Federation of Podcasts. So myself and my co-host, Kev, we are going through Arrow right now. And it's a fun ride. It's about to hit a very interesting period in the show's history, but we're looking forward to talking about it when we get there.
Are there any plans to like do the other shows like Flash, Supergirl, anything like that?
Maybe. Y'all just have to stay tuned.
Okay. All right. I'm excited. All right. Well, speaking of DC Comics, mm-hmm. our first big news story for the week is DC Future State, which is a new event, which is going on in the comics. Now, can you explain this to me? Because I've read so much about this, mm-hmm. and I am still super confused.
Okay, so it's their new launch initiative for a new slate of comics. This is no different from 2011 when they did the big event was the New 52. Okay, and then that was transitioned into Rebirth when they kind of undid everything, but then they kind of mixed things together as well. And then their newest thing at the moment is Dark Knight's Death Metal, right? And so the events that when that ends in 2021, early 2021, like the first week of January, I think is when that's supposed to is scheduled to end.
Yeah.
That the one of the epilogues is going to lead into this new thing, DC Future State. And this week, they came out with, I think it was like the day before Thanksgiving, that Wednesday, they came out with their DC Future State, basically like their like show Bible, basically.
Yeah.
And it kind of breaks down some of the things that we can expect. Because like some art had been released and there's some interesting new designs on some classic characters. But then there's also going to be a whole host of new characters. And the whole premise here that we're seeing here and I'm reading, it says, one of these epilogues will direct readers toward a new version of the DC Universe called Future State. But what exactly is Future State? It's an event that takes fans into the future outside of the usual confines of the multiverse, where adventures reach beyond the scope of mere maps. It's a place where new visions of the world's greatest heroes wage epic battles for justice that run parallel to their older counterparts' own hero struggles across a variety of different time frames. So, and it also goes on to say, Future State provides glimpses into wonders yet to come from the DC Universe, and where all the great stories from the past are real, and where all these stories count. It all matters because they all happened.
Okay. So let me try to break this down. Tell me if my interpretation of this is correct.
Okay.
So the big event which created the New 52 was Flashpoint, right?
Yes.
Okay. And then the big event which created Rebirth was Convergence, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And now, as I understand it, nothing is confirmed, but word on the street is that Future State is essentially going to be the equivalent of Flashpoint or Convergence, and that after Future State, there will be
likely something else.
New Rebirth, new 53, yeah. Whatever.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so that's good. And then looking at this, it seems like the Future State's going to last for 2 months, right? Like they did their whole list of like, they said when everything's coming out, and they actually have like a timeline for when each of these miniseries takes place, because they go from like 2025 to literally the end of time.
Yeah, literally. That is one of the things. It's the Immortal Wonder Woman is that title. And, you know, there's some interesting things that are going on here, because like there's going to be a new Justice League. Right. And there's a new Batman that is mysterious that we don't know who it is. And there's a new Teen Titans book, but it's like the original Titans, but they're all older and it's in the future. So there's some interesting things that are going on here. It does give them a chance to shake things up a little bit without necessarily really shaking things up, if you know what I mean. Because mm-hmm. I think that was kind of one of the problems with the New 52, is that like there's like, all right, well, look, we're starting everything back at one, square one, everything's at one. But everything that you know that happened prior to the New 52 existed, but it existed for 5 years. And we're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
So like, you mean to tell me that Batman has been Batman for 5 years and has had Dick Grayson and Jason Todd and Tim Drake?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's, yeah.
And Superman, like, has been Superman, and he, you know, sort of died versus Doomsday and then came back and all that stuff happened. Okay, sure. So I think this is that last statement of how, like, it all matters because it all happened is true in this sense, because, like, this is these are events that are way in the future. And so we're going to catch up with a lot of our heroes at very interesting places. Like, with Wonder Woman, like, one of the designs for Wonder Woman, she has Batman's utility belt and a Green Lantern ring. And so it's just like, ooh, what's going on there? You see our Batman, Bruce Wayne, is, like, you know, rough and tumble and very utilitarian. But then in the Justice League book, you see this newer, probably younger-looking Batman. There is a, you know, the Superman is John Kent, not Clark Kent, and Superman is like off somewhere on Warworld or something based on some of the designs. So it's an interesting concept. And like with the New 52, they know that they have my money, so I'm definitely going to be checking out all these things because it is interesting. And the other part of this is, like, a lot of the creators that are behind this, there's not a whole lot of huge names like there was with the New 52. There's not like, all right, Geoff Johns is doing a book. There's no Jeff Loeb doing a book. There's no Scott Snyder. There's not a lot of that. It's a lot of new blood, and I think that's also important.
Yeah. It seems like once someone is established in the comic book world, it's kind of hard to make way for new people in a lot of cases.
Yeah, there's no Grant Morrison starting something in this. It's a bunch of new blood. So I think that's pretty cool. And we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Now, I mean, I will say that, like, I remember when Marvel did their thing where they were like, after they sent like Avengers and stuff like that to essentially Image for them mm-hmm. to do, and then they came back with, you know, relaunching those books in the current timeline. I remember being at a convention with Kurt Busiek, who was doing Avengers, and someone was complaining, like, why is it Avengers number one? Like, I already have, you know, 300 Avengers, and, you know, you're going to start the numbering over again. And he's like, well, because people will buy the book because it's a number one, but no one will not buy the book because it's a number one.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's a lot to that. And I think that's why they're doing like a lot of this stuff like New 52 and Rebirth. And I have to say that as someone who was obsessed with comics, who worked in a comic book store in high school and mm-hmm. has since, you know, dropped out of comics, the big thing which prevents me from getting back in lots of times is that I don't know where to start. And whenever they do something like this, I mean, for a good long while there, when Rebirth happened, I was like, okay, I'm going to read everything. I'm going to read literally every comic book as like the paperbacks come out, just because, you know, I wanted to read the full story all at once.
And
because otherwise I forget. I mean, seriously, like, I spend 5 minutes reading a comic and then I have to wait a month for the next issue. And I'm like, what? I don't know what happened.
Well, see, I got like everything. Like, with like this, that was basically me with the New 52. Like, out of the New 52, I ended up, I think, getting 32 to 36 of them,
uh-huh.
like each month. So, like, y'all could do the math on that at home. But like, that's what I was doing.
Yeah,
and it was really cool. But at the same time, probably shouldn't have done that. And that's kind of the problem you run into with comics. It's like, you know, especially when they're going to like just restart stuff at a certain point. It's just like, well, what was all that for?
Yeah. And I mean, I guess that's the other thing too, which, I mean, we don't really know what's going to happen. We don't know if they're going to restart everything, but it certainly seems like that's the case. One rumor which I heard, which I don't know if this is true or not, was that they were really going to sort of like fracture things off and make it so that like books became much more standalone, you know, so that you didn't have to read like Superman would not be crossing over with Batman so much. It would just be like, here's Batman, you know, whatever.
Okay.
I don't know if that's true or not, but that's something that I heard. And that's kind of a, like the opposite of what a lot of this stuff is, you know, where it's like,
yes.
Oh, here's Future State. But before you read Future State, you need to read, you know, Dark Knight's Metal or whatever, because it's going to lead into, you know, and maybe making it simpler is a way to get more people to commit, or because it's not a commitment. You can just say like, well, read this book. It's just a book. Just read it.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. Interesting. Something that I'm very curious about, but I think that I am going to be checking out Future State and see what it's all about.
Yeah.
Because it does sound interesting.
They have my money, so, you know, we'll let y'all know.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of some other DC stuff, I guess, you know, everybody knows, you know, the movie world was shook to its core last week when they announced that Wonder Woman 1984 would be dropping on HBO Max.
Yeah.
And certainly not the first big movie from 2020 to come to a streamer, and certainly not the last. And it looks like there's another one on the way from Warners. They seem to have found their formula, so to speak, for the time being, with Godzilla versus Kong, which is supposedly headed to a streamer in one way or another. Apparently, Netflix offered them like $200 million to put it on there, and Warners is blocking that deal in order to come up with their own deal to essentially sell it to themselves in order to put it on HBO Max. It's all very confusing because, like, it's their movie and they control the distribution, but another party, Legendary Pictures, paid for like 75% of the movie. So
That's where this gets tricky.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, Legendary wants to make sure that they get paid, but at the same time, Warners is like, we need to sell this HBO Max thing. If we get it on there, that would be good. So it looks like it's probably going to be headed to HBO Max. That seems to be the trajectory here. And you know, I get it. I got, in full disclosure, like I work for a movie theater chain. I'm a film programmer, so it's in my best interest for movies to come out on the big screen. But that being said, regardless of that, like, that's where I want to watch movies. And I understand that currently it's hard to watch movies on the big screen.
Yes.
But I would rather wait a few more months to see Godzilla versus Kong on a massive movie theater screen instead of watching it on my TV at home. That's just my personal opinion, but obviously.
No, I agree with you. And, you know, the times are making us make interesting decisions about certain things. And these businesses, you know, like in particular, like Warners, like they want their products out there. Right. And they don't want, and the thing is, like, they're tired of being patient about it. And that's the unfortunate thing, because they have spent X amount of money to produce these things, and they're just kind of sitting there, and they need some return on their investment as soon as possible. And they have this HBO Max that they're trying to, you know, I don't want to say that they're desperate to get content for, because there's plenty of content there, but they need a Mandalorian. They need something specific that will get people to be like, oh, I'm definitely getting and subscribing to HBO Max. They need something like that. And that's why, you know, the Wonder Woman thing happened, because we saw that this didn't happen for Tenet, right?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So, but with, I think Warner's has found, is like, oh, well, our superhero stuff could be a huge draw, the same way that, you know, all the Marvel stuff on Disney Plus is, to a certain extent. And the Disney stuff, like, obviously with Disney Plus. But here, I think they just was like, we need stuff that people will definitely want to buy and purchase a subscription for, even if it's just, you know, 1 month so they can see it. Like, they, like, you know, if they can get, they, I think they figure if they can get somebody to subscribe for 1 month, then they'll do it for that 1 month, and they will either A, forget that they have the subscription and just let it lapse for a couple of times, mm-hmm. or they'll be like, hey, there's some cool stuff on here, let's just keep it.
And I imagine part of it is also just using that as sort of like a bargaining chip for things like Roku, I guess, is the big one now. Mm-hmm. You know, there have been a lot of problems behind the scenes with HBO Max getting onto various devices, like the Amazon Fire, you know, Stick or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Like that, they just showed up there and everything because they just could not come to terms with HBO and these various, you know, platforms in order to get the product out there. Like, if you got a bunch of people who are like, look, I have HBO Max, I need to watch Wonder Woman, you know, that might be enough to, you know, be like a tipping point for Roku to be like, okay, fine, you know, we'll agree to this deal with HBO in order to get it on there. But yeah, also, I mean, like you're saying, like people signing up for a month and then, you know, getting rid of it or whatever. I mean, Wonder Woman, it's a real interesting kind of system that they have here for this whole distribution thing. It's very complex, but like Wonder Woman is going to be both in theaters and on HBO Max for like a month.
Yeah.
And then after that month, it's going to leave HBO Max and just be in theaters. Mm-hmm. And then a month after that, it's going to be available for like purchase or like premium rental for like $30 or whatever. So like after a month, like you're not even going to have Wonder Woman on HBO Max. Mm-hmm. They're going to need something to get people to stay.
To come back, yeah.
And Godzilla versus Kong could very well be that thing.
Yeah, and it's interesting because like the timing, like how I mentioned, like how you... they're probably wanting people to like to at least sign up for that 1 month. So that way they have them in some sort of capacity. And then it, once it leaves and they can supplement that loss with a new thing.
Right.
Right. Then they'll try to get people to either stay on or, you know, forget about it and just keep it and, or re-up in many cases. And this is kind of what they wanted to do with, on the DC Universe app, like, you know, RIP to that. But that's kind of what they were doing because like each month with like they had a new thing happen, right? Mm-hmm. Like it was like Titans and then Doom Patrol. And then after a certain amount of time, then it was Swamp Thing. It's like they staggered the releases of those things and they made it to where like it like the shows weren't bingeable. Like they came out each week. So you had to keep watching stuff and you had to keep the service and keep giving them the money. I wonder if maybe the thought of doing a schedule like that crossed their mind, or maybe if this is just a hybrid version. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I think my favorite example of that is CBS All Access with their short treks where they're like, okay, well, we're in between seasons of Discovery. So we're going to do these 10-minute shorts, which will come out once a month. So mm-hmm. you can't even like subscribe and then cancel. You're literally paying like $10 for 10 minutes.
Yes.
Which, of course, I did. But, you know, still a little shady. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Everybody's got something. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what they do here with this. I mean, Warner Brothers has been kind of at the forefront of releasing their movies on their big blockbusters, you know, on streaming platforms. But at the same time, they've found a way to sort of make it work with theaters as well, you know, like mm-hmm. Wonder Woman coming out in theaters and everything like that. So hopefully, and apparently that's their plan for Godzilla 2. So hopefully, you know, like assuming that theaters are open and all the rest of it, obviously there's a lot of variables going on at this point, but assuming that theaters are open, even if it does come to HBO Max, hopefully it'll also be on the big screen as well for people who want to see it that way. So
yeah,
we shall see. Because, I mean, the other problem that they're running into, which is certainly hopefully going to become an issue in the future, is that there's so much content which has not been released yet. Mm-hmm. That, you know, there just isn't space on the calendar to release it once theaters do finally open.
Yeah.
You know, and they're going to certainly give preference to something like, you know, In the Heights or whatever over Godzilla versus Kong. So
that is true.
Yeah. Oh, well, we shall see. Mm-hmm. So moving on to other things, we were just talking about Star Trek. You know, there's a new Star Trek series in the works right now called Strange New Worlds. Have you been watching the Star Trek shows or?
I've watched Lower Decks. I'm behind on Discovery, and I've not yet watched Picard yet.
Okay, well, Lower Decks is the best one, so that's all that.
Lower Decks was funny.
It was great.
It made me laugh.
I loved it so much. Well, they've got a Discovery spinoff coming out called Strange New Worlds, which is going to be about Captain Pike and, you know, Lieutenant Spock and Number One and the crew of the USS Enterprise back before Kirk was involved. And, you know, the showrunner on that is Akiva Goldsman, who has worked on both Discovery and Picard, huge Star Trek fan going all the way back to the beginning. And of course, an Oscar-winning screenwriter for things like
A Beautiful Mind.
Yeah, but he also wrote some good movies like Batman Forever and I Am Legend and stuff like that. So, yeah, you know, this is like a passion project for him. Like when he started working on Discovery, he was like, this is the thing that I care about most in my career right now. And, you know, when they decided to do Strange New Worlds, he was like, well, that's what I wanted from the beginning. That's what I thought Discovery was. So I'm all over this. And because of that, it's not really a surprise that it was just revealed that he is going to be directing at least the pilot of Strange New Worlds himself.
Okay.
Which is cool. You know, I know that he's a very polarizing figure in the world of film and geek products and stuff like that. But I personally love Akiva Goldsman. Batman Forever. That was the first Batman movie I saw on the big screen.
Nice.
I can't see the forest through the trees with that one, but I do love it.
No, I do too. I think it gets a bad rap, and I think it gets looped into because it gets roped in with Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
And people just automatically assume that Forever is the same quality as Batman and Robin, but it's not the case.
Not at all.
Y'all need to watch it.
Yeah. But and you look at like the other stuff that he's done, like I Am Legend, and it's really good. But as impressed as I am with him as a writer, I'm probably more impressed with him as a director. You know, the stuff that he's done on Star Trek, he did episode 3 of Discovery, which was the first one with the Discovery, you know, like essentially the second
Contact
pilot.
For Kings?
Is that what it was called? Where you know, they first bring Burnham onto Discovery and were introduced to, you know, Lorca and everyone else.
Oh, the episode that should have been the pilot.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
The second pilot, yeah. And like you look at that and what he was doing there, and it is so good. And you wonder, like, why didn't they stick with that tone? Like, that would have been so amazing. And, you know, he's done some stuff, like he did the finale for season one of Discovery and the finale for Picard. And he's a really, really good director. And I'm excited to see what he's going to do with Strange New Worlds. I think that's going to be cool.
His resume speaks for itself, you know, both as a writer, director, but also a producer. Like a lot of the producing credits, I think are probably what I'm most impressed with. And he's done a lot of things that I really, really like. And if this is going to be a passion project for him, and given his resume and given his affinity for the Star Trek franchise, I think this is a win.
Yeah, I agree. And of course, you know, I mean, he's not going to direct every episode, I'm sure, but the fact that he's going to set the tone, and considering how well he set the tone for something like Discovery, I think that that's, even though I'm sure it's going to be a very different tone,
I agree.
It's going to be cool, though. You know, it's going to be cool. And I think this is going to be the first time that a Star Trek pilot has been directed by the creator of the show, if I'm not mistaken. So,
Okay, maybe. Interesting.
Yeah. All right. So our next news item is something which is kind of tangential, but it still counts.
Okay.
Field of Dreams.
Yes.
You a fan of Field of Dreams?
I am.
Yeah. I guess I am too, sort of. I don't know. It was like my favorite movie as a kid, and then I watched it as an adult, and I'm like, it's fine.
It's fine. No, it's like it's not my favorite sports movie. It's not even my favorite baseball movie. No. But I still like it. And I still enjoy it.
Yeah, it's enjoyable. I don't know. The thing that I always think about is like, you know, Field of Dreams and Eight Men Out, which are kind of about the same subjects in a way, but told completely different ways. Like when you're a kid, you're like, Field of Dreams is amazing and Eight Men Out is super boring. And then when you're an adult, you go back and you rewatch them and you're like, oh no, Eight Men Out is like a billion times better than Field of Dreams.
Yes.
Well, you know, everybody loves Field of Dreams in one way or another for one reason or another. And you know, that field where they shot it, the Field of Dreams in Dyersville, Iowa, which is just a baseball field in the middle of a cornfield. It still exists to this day.
Which is pretty incredible if you really think about it. Like,
have you ever been there by any chance?
I've not. I've not been to Iowa. To be quite honest, there's not going to be a whole lot that will get me to Iowa. This might be the one thing that does if I ever go. But yeah.
My aunt and uncle have like a weekend home in Galena, Illinois, which is like just down the street. So a few years back, we were there for the weekend and my uncle was like, come on, let's go. Let's, you know, check it out or whatever. So we went and, I mean, it's literally just that, you know, I mean, like they have the house from the movie there, which is basically like their gift shop, and you can just go and you can play on the field.
You can you can play on it?
Yeah, it's just like it's like you'll go and there are people there literally just, you know, like hitting balls or playing catch or whatever. Oh, you can just walk on the field and play on it, you know, and then, you know, you can walk out of the corn and, you know, take a picture of yourself walking out of the corn,
that's awesome.
You know, that kind of thing. But that's literally like all there is there. There's nothing else there. So, you know, it's cool and everything, but now there is something else there. There's an 8,000 seat stadium, which they've built for a Major League Baseball game, which is actually going to be played at the Field of Dreams. And this is something which they had intended to do last year, but with COVID, it was going to be the White Sox versus the Yankees. With COVID, they changed it to the White Sox versus the Cardinals. Then like half of the Cardinals got COVID and they decided to cancel the game and postpone it till next year. So now they're doing it. They've announced the date is August 12th, 2021. It will once again be the White Sox versus the Yankees. And I think that that's pretty cool.
That is cool. And you know, it should be those two teams that play just for the history of it all.
Yeah.
And just the marketing aspect. I mean, that's just what you got to do with it. This is so much better and so much cooler than when the players play at Williamsport, which like, that's cool that they do that. Like, and they involve the little leaguers and, you know, they hang out with them. The little leaguers get, you know, the best seats in the house. And that's really cool. This is so much cooler.
It is. And I mean, when they first announced this, like, because I live in Chicago, I'm a huge White Sox fan. And, you know, when they first announced this, everybody just like freaked out, like, oh my God, I got to go. Like, I was getting texts from everybody, like, when do we get tickets and everything? And I'm like, they only have 8,000 seats. Those things are going to go like that. Like, it's going to be harder to get tickets to this than it is to like the Super Bowl, you know?
Yeah.
And yet, you know, like, you know, someone I work with was like, well, I booked my hotel for, you know, Dyersville, Iowa, because just in case, you know, like things like that, like people are really, really, really looking forward to it. And you look at like the stadium that was built and like the outfield walls are made out of like plexiglass so that you can see the corn behind them and everything.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, they're really like doing it up. They're really getting into the movie for this, which is cool. I will say though that, you know, they released like the uniforms that they were planning on wearing, and for some reason they were going with uniforms from the 30s instead of 1917. Like, it wasn't why wouldn't you wear the uniforms from the movies?
Yeah,
come on guys,
it's so easy.
Get it together. Oh well. Maybe they'll alter their plans.
Maybe. As long as they don't wear those like all white, all black players weekend uniforms that they had last year. Do you remember those?
Oh, yeah.
Those were awful. Like, you couldn't see a logo or a player's name. It was like, what is this?
You know? Oh, well, Major League Baseball. What can you do? But bringing back, you know, a classic movie, you know, making it real, it's pretty cool. Life imitating art.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So our final story for today is a bit of sad news. David Prowse, the actor who played Darth Vader in the Star Wars movies, has passed away. Mm-hmm. By all accounts, he was a really cool guy and certainly a big presence in the fan community, having gone to a lot of conventions and everything like that. Yeah. For me personally, though, he was always kind of an interesting piece of the sort of like filmmaking puzzle. Like, mm-hmm. you know, when you're a little kid and someone says like, well, there's one guy who's, you know, playing Darth Vader in the suit, but then they use another guy's voice and everything like that. And like that just sparked something, you know, in my imagination, like, wow, like movies really are magic, you know?
Yeah. Well, not only magic, but like, you know, it's a group team effort, like, mm-hmm. and by all accounts, because he had to share this role with James Earl Jones. And for a lot of people, he's like, he's an unknown. He's an unknown part of that, of this whole mythos. Yeah. Because when you say Darth Vader, most people just think, oh yeah, it's James Earl Jones. They kind of bypass him, but like he had to do all the other stuff. And so he put in just as much work, and he's just as much a part of the universe as James is. And so he, you know, we pay our respects and we say, you know, rest in peace, life well lived. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but we acknowledge his contribution.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just today looking at, you know, some of the videos of the stuff where with the raw footage before they, you know, looped in James Earl Jones and everything. And I mean, it is interesting because it's, you know, there's been a lot of talk with the Mandalorian and everything about like Pedro Pascal not being in the suit and stuff. Mm-hmm. And like you look at the performance, just the physical performance of David Prowse, and it's like, geez, you know, like he was really doing something there. You know, it would not be the same with someone else in the suit. You know, he certainly was like the literal physical embodiment of that character, right? Mm-hmm. And that's pretty cool. I mean, one of, if not the most iconic movie villains of all time.
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
He will be missed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. So that pretty much does it for this week. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with some more movie news. Who knows? Or nerd news, whatever news. Who knows what it's going to be?
Whatever comes up.
But until then, Lance, where can people find you on the internet?
They can find me at Sir Lance Laster on all of my social medias. And you can also find me talking about all the things that make Arrow, Arrow on Always Hold On to Arrow podcast. We are part of the United Federation of Podcasts, and you can find us on Twitter at Do Not Fail Our Pod.
All right. And you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Mumbles3K. You can also find me on my website, filmdamagepod.com, doing a show called Film Damage, where we discuss film projection, Star Trek, and time travel. And you can find the network on Twitter at Join Nerd Party, or visit our website at thenerdparty.com, and be sure to check out all the shows on The Nerd Party. So, thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.